congressional report, which is being released today, as well as some additional information at your desk. In addition to that, we also provide every participating K-12 school or district with their own aggregated local data, plus the state and national data to use for comparisons and benchmarks. And so as I look around the room, I know there are several districts that are represented here that have not only participated in Speak Up, but actively used their data for planning, and maybe we'll get a little bit into that while we're talking. We do have student surveys that are available for K-12 students, grade level appropriate, parents, teachers, administrators, and this past year we did two new surveys. One was for media technology coordinators and also one for librarians that was very interesting as well. The types of questions that are on the survey are, as you would imagine, around learning and teaching with technology. We also ask questions about a wide strand of emerging technologies. We ask questions about mobile learning, online learning, digital content, e-textbooks, games, Web 2.0, social networking. We also ask the respondents specific questions that are key to their audience level. So we ask teachers about professional development. We ask parents about internet safety. We also ask all the respondents, as I mentioned before, to comment or to help us, shall we say, design that ultimate school of the future. What type of technology would be most impactful for learning? Since we started this project in fall 2003, we've had about 2.2 million surveys presented to us through the annual Speak Up surveys. And you can see the breakdown there. They represent about 30,000 districts from all 50 states, as well as schools and districts that participate with us on our military bases all around the world, Canada, Mexico. We actually have participation now from all over the world. We have some wonderful sponsors that make the Speak Up process available and accessible to all of these different schools and districts. And so I just want to recognize some of the representatives that are here from our partners. Mick and Tara are here from Smart Technologies. Thank you to them. Duncan is here with a whole team from Blackboard. It's wonderful to have all of you here. Meredith is here representing CDWG. It's nice to have you here. I don't know if Anne-Marie is here yet. On her way. Okay. My good friends from School Wires are represented here by Anna Kimsey. She's here somewhere in the room. Hi, Anna. Nice to see you again. And then also, I know that my good friends from K-12 are also going to be joining us. I don't know if she asked. Some of the folks are here already. It's so nice to have all of you here. And as I said, we are going to be using the interactive smart board today, as well as some other of Smart's products. So thank you to Smart for providing the teaching tools for us today. We also have some wonderful nonprofit partners. We actually work with about 75 nonprofit partners and associations that help us with outreach and also give us ideas for the types of questions that should be included in the survey. And I know some of my good friends are here as well. Sarah is here from CETA. I know you're here, Sarah. Oh, right in front of me. Allison is here from iNACOL. Thank you, Allison. I've got several folks here from ISTE. Both Steve and Hillary are here, and Hillary's daughter is even with her because it's Take Your Daughter to Work Day. I think that's really exciting. I know there's some folks here from, right here, Lucy's here from NSBA, so nice to have you. And I know people are coming from COSIN as well. So what I'd like to do before we get too much more into the program is invite Dale to come up. Dale is the American Chemical Society AAAS Fellow currently in Senator Rockefeller's office. He's on sabbatical from Western Colorado University, where he's in the chemistry department. And so nice to have Dale here to give a few opening remarks. Thank you, Dale.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And thanks, Julie. So as Julie said, I'm Dale North, and I'm working in the office of Senator Rockefeller this year. And on behalf of Senator Rockefeller, I'd like to welcome each of you here to the Speak Up 2010 National Findings. Senator Rockefeller has long recognized the importance of technology for learning and for our communities. He's a tireless advocate for the E-Rate program, which brings the internet into so many of your schools and libraries. Some people don't even know it's there, but that's oftentimes how the technology gets to you. And he also recently led a letter with 13 other senators to the Appropriations Committee, stressing the need for continued support for the Enhancing Education Through Technology, or EdTech grant program, in both the continuing resolution and in the 2012 fiscal year as we start the budget for that. Thank you. And I urge, you know, each of you to continue interacting with each of your elected officials. It's important that everyone understand the impacts of the cuts that are being considered. So talk to your friends and talk to those who you think might not agree with you. It's important that we here in Congress hear from parents, hear from students, hear from everybody. It's an effective way of interacting. Senator Rockefeller understands the importance of technology in the classroom to prepare students for success in the 21st century. He also understands its power to attract students to STEM fields, and he was reminded of that recently. He was visiting Piedmont Elementary. It's a year-round NASA Explorer school in Charleston, West Virginia. And he was talking to a young lady there who was in the, I think, fourth grade, maybe fifth grade classroom. And after a few minutes of discussion with the senator, she said, I'm sorry, Senator, but I don't have time to talk right now. I need to get back to my space station project. So he understands the power that technology has to attract students, even away from 6'7", you know, senators from the state. He does regret not being able to be here today. He's participating right now in a press conference, noting the anniversary next week of the terrible Upper Big Branch mine tragedy in West Virginia last year. I've been working in the senator's office as an American Chemical Society AAAS congressional fellow since the fall. As Julie said, I'm on sabbatical from teaching chemistry and chairing the science department at Western State College, so I certainly, on a personal level, understand directly the impact that technology has on teaching and on learning. I've been in the classroom for 16 years, and I've seen how it's changed, you know, from the way I was taught in college to the way I started teaching to the way I continue to teach now. And now my daughter is in ninth grade, and I see how different it is for her, too. So I certainly get that directly. And I'm looking forward to hearing the findings from this year's survey, and we'll be certain to share them with the senator. So thanks a lot, Julie.
Thank you, Dale. It is very nice having you here with us today to comment also on the data findings. Well, as I said, we're going to do things a little bit differently this year. So what we're going to do is I'm going to start talking about some of the data findings that we have, and then just very short time frame, I'm going to bring up our panel, which are actually going to function more as respondents to the data today. So we're going to have more of an interactive session. It's a great big long table, though. You can see it's, as John said, it sort of looks like it's the jury box or something. So why don't we have our panelists come up at this point, both our students and our parents. And once they get settled, I'll introduce them to you. Okay, so let me introduce you to all these fabulous panelists that we have here. So starting here on the side closest to the smart board is Jake Smith. He's a fourth grade student from Jamestown Elementary School, which is part of the Arlington District. Sitting next to him is Anna Gutman, right? Yes, I can see Anna there, who is a fifth grade student at Jamestown Elementary School. And Anna has a special guest in the audience. Her sister Abigail is actually here with us, so that's very nice to have Abigail here as well. And then next to Anna is Blade Aliu. And he is an eighth grade student from Kenmore Middle School. Now, if Blade looks familiar to any of you, I'm going to help you with the memory a little bit. Just 2 weeks ago, President Obama was at Kenmore Middle School making a visit, and I think Blade helped him with some smart board activities. Maybe we might have to ask him a little bit more about that. Next to Blade is Lyric Hatcher, who's also an eighth grade student at Kenmore. Going further down the line there, I think I have Mark Miller next. No, I have Desrael, sorry, I lined it up wrong. Desrael Sylvester, who's a senior at Digital Harbor High School. And then Mark Miller, who's a junior at Digital Harbor High School. So welcome to all of our students that are here. And we have some wonderful educators that came along with those students. My friend Michael Goodman, who is, I don't know where Michael, there he is, who is from Kenmore Middle School, Camilla Gagliolio, who is from Jamestown Elementary School, and then Jan Purnell, who is from Digital Harbor High School, who made available these students. And then because we're releasing the student and the parent data, we have some parent respondents with us as well, some very brave souls who said they would get up there and represent the parents of America in our Speak Up survey. So Bix is Blade's dad. Dana is Jake's dad. Lydia is Lyric's dad. And Catherine is Anna's mom. There we go. Okay, folks. Now that we have all the introductions done, we can get going. So let me tell you a little bit about Speak Up 2010. We had an amazing response all across the country again this year. We had, as you can see, about 380,000 online surveys that were submitted nationwide. And you can see the breakdown in terms of the participation. It represented about 6,500 schools all around the country. And we had some very, very strong participation from some top 12 states in the country. And I see my friend Janie Moore is here representing Maryland, one of those top 12 states who participates not only very heavily in Speak Up, but actually uses the data to inform policy and programs as well. We disaggregate our data and look at the back end of the data to make sure that the data findings that we're sharing with you are representative of the country. And so we're pleased every year that about a third, tweaked a little bit each year, is the way it breaks down between urban, rural, and suburban. And actually, in this year's data set, about 51% of the schools in the data set were Title I eligible. We do statistical significance testing on our data, and we'd be happy to share some of that with you if you were interested. So what all these Speak Up findings, all these years of collecting all this data, the 2.2 million surveys that we've had submitted since 2003, what does that tell us about the future of learning? Why are you here today, and why is this an important conversation for all of us to be having? In fact, what we're finding is that increasingly what students are telling us about the way they want to use technology for learning is, in fact, a proxy for how they want to learn in general. And that by examining the use of technology, it's not just about the technology, it's actually much more about the learning modalities and the paradigms around learning. So we've got a lot to learn from how the kids are talking about technology. In last year's report, we talked about the unique student vision for learning and identified for our audiences three types of learning paradigms that the students were most interested in: social-based learning, untethered learning, and digitally rich learning. And that's in last year's report, which, if you're interested in that, is on our website. This year's report, we're taking that concept one step further. And this year's report, we're talking about the three new E's, shall we say, of education: enabled, engaged, and empowered, how students are leveraging these emerging technologies. In this year's report, we did a deep dive into three key trends that we see all across the country. We see them being discussed in conferences, we see them being discussed in Congress, we see them being discussed in conference rooms all around the country: mobile learning, online and blended learning, and e-textbooks and digital content. So the national report is a deeper dive into those three trends this year, which is a little something different than we've done in the past. So what we're going to do is that we're going to do a deep dive here today on each one of those three and also have the students interact with us. So the first thing we're going to do is that we are going to have an interactive experience here today. And if you've been with us before, you know that I like to ask questions of the audience and get the questions participation. We're actually going to be using a new product from Smart Technologies today where you have the opportunity to do polling with a smartphone. So if you have a smartphone and would like to take your smartphone out and participate with us in the polling, you can do that. It is allowed here. I know some places it isn't, and it's not April Fool's. It is actually allowed. I'm not going to, you know, start collecting your phones when you take them out just because it's April Fool's. So go ahead and take your phones out. And our first polling question is a little bit of a thought-provoking question, shall we say. So knowing that it is April 1st, and I actually am based in Southern California, and it was 90 yesterday in Southern California, I thought we needed to have a little summery beach palm tree picture. So imagine for a moment you're going to spend a month on a deserted island. What is the one mobile technology that you would have to have with you? So take out your phones. And Tara, I might need your help up here to get started. I need to start my assessment, isn't that right? Okay, so folks, start thinking about which one of these mobile technologies you're going to want. And then what I'm going to need you to do is, am I good so far? As I'm going to have you with your smartphone, you're going to go to that website right there, the http://response.smarttech.com. And we're also going to pay very close attention to this number. This number is very important for us. Okay, and then once you get there, it's going to ask you to input, does it say number, student ID, or what does it say?
Assessment ID.
A student ID. So when it comes up and it says the assessment ID, just put that number in. And then you can click beyond the student ID. Everybody get the number? We're good? I'll leave. Yeah, we have helpers here. And then once you get to that, once you get to the question, it's going to ask, you'll see the same thing here, what's the one mobile technology that you absolutely need to have? I could probably close this down and we could just write the number up on the board. Yeah, it's right over here. It's right over here. Right there. Okay, folks. Right here. 783216. Okay. Okay, so folks, take your choice. What is it that you absolutely have to have? Is it an iPad, a handheld video game player, a smartphone, a digital reader, an MP3 player, or that all-important portable latte frother? Everybody has different choices. We'll give you a couple seconds. Are we okay? This was kind of our test to see how this was going to work. And so I'm going to go ahead and stop this question. And it's collecting our results. So as you can see, we could do this in a classroom in terms of some kind of quick and easy assessment with our students. And so what we can see here is it looked like smartphone was the response of choice, obviously with 79% of the audience choosing that. A few people chose an iPad. And then I can't see what that other one was, that little tiny slice. I don't think anybody chose the latte frother, though. Must be a techie audience. That's what it is, a techie audience. Am I good now to just go on? I'm good. Do I need to close that down? I can go right back over there. Okay, so what we're going to do now is that we are going to, one more, the white one. There we go. There we go. Is that we're going to focus in on mobile learning. Since we started talking about mobile learning, we're going to focus in on mobile learning. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share a little bit of responses from the survey. We're then going to look at some additional data on the smart board, and then we're going to have a panel discussion just about mobile learning at this point. So this is always the favorite question that everyone always asks us on the Speak Up data, and that is, do students have access to mobile devices? So let's take a look at a couple different things just here on this chart. We do ask all the respondents, the students as well as the adults, what type of mobile devices do they have? And so let me draw your eye here to just a couple key points. The most important one, or the most interesting one for us, was actually this number here and this number right here. As you can see, from smartphones, almost a third, a little bit more than a third of middle school students and 44% of high school students told us last fall that they had their own smartphone that they could conceivably use in school. That was a 42% increase for both middle school and high school students from fall 2009 to fall 2010. So if we have any doubt out there that we're moving to a highly mobile society or hitting that tipping point in terms of students having access and thus the ability to better leverage this type of computing power in the classroom, we're definitely getting to it. You can see this is the first time that we've asked the question about iPads, but even there we start to see some really significant numbers in terms of student access. I did a focus group with some fifth graders in November in Queens, not a highly affluent school in Queens. And just as sort of as part of the focus group, I asked the students if any of them had an iPad. I'll be honest with you, it was a frivolous question on my part. I sort of thought I was just sort of throwing it out there. Of the 24 fifth graders in that class, 21 raised their hand and said they had an iPad at home. The teacher's head popped up in the back, and he immediately was not only astounded, but started thinking about how he could leverage that type of technology right there in his school. We asked students, so once you have those mobile devices, and if they were allowed in school, how would you want to use them for schoolwork? And the students gave us two different type of responses. One was to increase the effectiveness of their actual school process. So doing the same type of things that they're doing, but just doing it through the mobile device. Checking grades, maybe using the calendar. And then they also told us, though, that there was ways that they could leverage the unique capabilities of this mobile computing to really impact their learning in a significant way. That opportunity to do internet research, to find out information that they needed anytime, anywhere, was, as you could see, the number one response. But they also talked about a desire to collaborate with peers and teachers, to create and share documents, and even to record lectures or labs so that they could review them later. So we're going to have another one of our opportunities here to ask your opinion as to what the Speak Up data told us. I'm going to start another assessment. We're going to use that same number. You should already be in there. If you didn't close down your smartphone, you should already be in there. It's a different number. I'm sorry, I thought it was going to be the same number. So we're at 581-313. I'll give you a second there to get there. And this time we're going to ask you, what do you think is the number one tool that students told us they wanted to use to collaborate with peers? And I'm going to go ahead and do the same thing I did before, just so it doesn't cover up your response. I'll write it over here. 581-313. That's a 5. That's an 8. Okay, so go ahead. Let's give us your response. We're redecorating a little bit here. Okay, so it looks like the number one response, at least here from this audience, was a little hard for me to tell what that was. Looked like it was email, and then after that was social networking, and then 12% chose instant and text messaging. Well, I have to tell you that the number one response, both from middle school students and high school students on last year's survey, was instant and text messaging. Overwhelmingly, a majority of the students said that was their preferred way to collaborate. That dovetails right in with what we know about their interest in mobile learning. Email, as we know, is kind of on the wane with kids. Some of you have heard me say it before. Some of the kids tell us it's just for communicating with grandparents. The one that we see kind of rising up is the idea of using Skype. Okay, so moving right along, now we're going to get to the opportunity where we're going to talk about the administrator side of this. So we asked the administrators last year, how likely are you to allow students to use their own mobile devices in school? Not surprising to any of the administrators that are here, 63% of those administrators said no way. However, when we asked parents, how likely are you to go and buy a mobile device for your child to use at school if it was allowed and could be used for schoolwork, we see the reverse. We see two-thirds of parents saying not only would they support the purchase of that mobile device, but a majority of them would purchase a data plan as well to go along with that. When we disaggregate that data and we look at urban areas, rural areas, and Title I schools, we see very little differentiation in that parent perspective, which is very, very interesting. So now what I'd like to do is we're going to now have a little bit of a panel discussion about mobile learning. First thing I'm going to do, though, is I'm going to have Jake and Anna come up to the board, and I'm going to bring up a very special map that I have here of the United States. So come on up, Jake and Anna. And Jake and Anna are going to share some data from some different states with us. Now what I want to do first is I want to take us back. Remember I was in California, it was 90 degrees. We're going back, okay? We're all going back to California. So who's going to bring up California for me? Go ahead. Yeah? It should come. There you go. Okay, so this is some data findings from Anaheim Elementary School District. Jake and Anna, do you know what's in Anaheim in California? You ever heard of Anaheim before? Ever heard of Disneyland? These are kids that live right near Disneyland. We asked them, how would you use, these are third, fourth, and fifth graders, how would you use a mobile device for schoolwork? And what the third, fourth, and fifth graders told us that we thought was really significant was that they were going to check their grades as well as play educational games. So what do you, Anna and Jake, what do you think about that? How would you use a mobile device for schoolwork? Like a smartphone or an iPod Touch or an iPad? What do you think you would do with those devices? Same, you think? Most of the same things? Okay. All right. I don't know if you can reach up here. Maybe I got to come do it. You guys are a little short. Let's get back to the map. Now what I want us to do is I want us to go to Illinois, okay? Because we want to see what third, fourth, and fifth graders say in Illinois. Jake, do you know where Illinois is? Beautiful. You want to give it a big punch? There we go. Okay, so we asked students in Illinois, what type of devices do you have? Here's what the third, fourth, and fifth graders told us. About a third of them have their a cell phone without internet access. What we thought was really interesting is that 18% of them told us that they had a smartphone. We also had large participation this year from Chicago Public Schools. Speak Up is a major initiative within Chicago Public Schools. And that 18% number actually is the same number we heard from Chicago Public Schools students grades 3, 4, and 5. So for Jake and Anna, do you guys have a cell phone? No. Do you have a smartphone? No. Do you have an iPad? Family iPad? A family has an iPad? Does she let you use it? Okay. Right. Do you have an iPod? Yeah. How about a handheld game player? Nintendo DS or Game Boy or something like that? Okay. Do you want a smartphone? Sorry, Mom and Dad. Okay, guys. You did a great job. Why don't you guys go ahead and sit down? Okay, so let's hear a little bit more about mobile learning from the rest of our panel a little bit. Parents, let's start on your side of things. So what do you think about this trend of possibly using mobile devices, maybe using smartphones or possibly using iPads if the schools have them or if you have them and can bring them in? What do you think about that idea of mobile devices within learning? And you can actually pick up the microphone if you want. There's a button on the bottom to turn it on. It's on the bottom. There you go.
Is it on now?
Yes.
Okay. I'm supportive of it. I think one of the challenges that schools will have to deal with is how to make them accessible to all of the students in the classroom. As you can see, there's obviously growing interest, but clearly not everybody is able to purchase one of these devices. And I do think it's important because when we talk about literacy for our kids now, it's not just about reading and writing, but it's being able to communicate through all these modes of technology. And so having them able to learn those in school and learn the appropriate ways to use them, what information they can access, what information is good and valuable, and what information that's out there that it's not, I think that's a way the schools can really be helpful for our children.
I just also wanted to add the importance of, you know, the mobility of the whole thing, and the impact that overall the savings that's produced from electronic books instead of, you know, the paper books, etc. But the one thing that I think that we don't focus on is the ability for these tools such as iPods in language learning. You know, the ability to be able to listen and to practice and to have that mobile, I think, is vital, especially in a world where, you know, my son doesn't take his earphones off when I speak, so at least he'll be hearing something, you know, good in the thing. But those are concepts that could, you know, pedagogically be very, very important.
And for me, the mobile device is like everything else in education. It comes back to the teacher. So a great teacher will be able to figure out how to use them to enhance learning. For a teacher that's not so great, I fear that it would just be used as a gimmick, and then the kids will be spending a lot of time in class kind of futzing with the device itself, and maybe it's broken today, and a distraction. So I would want there to be real leadership from our excellent educators in making sure that the best practices are really being shared widely.
And to piggyback on the responsibility of the teachers, because students all learn differently, that challenges the teachers to come up with creative ways of teaching, because everybody's not going to learn the same way. But I do support it. I think it's a good thing.
Thank you very much, parents. I just want to bring up, I've had the opportunity, the wonderful pleasure and opportunity, to visit all three of the schools that the students are representing and the parents are representing. And in particular, I spent a little time with Camilla at Jamestown Elementary, where they're doing some really interesting things with a whole range of different mobile devices in the classroom, and so very nice, interesting models, and definitely addresses all the issues that you brought up. So we're going to have some more time at the end for Q&A, but we're going to move on to a sort of our next focused topic area here. And that is, we're going to talk about online and blended learning. Lots of conversation this year about how to better leverage online learning, digital learning, to not only encompass fully online classes, but also the blended learning environment where the online tools and services are supporting the learning process. One of the things that we thought was really interesting in the SpeakUp data is to look at it over time. And so in this particular perspective, what we did is that we took a look at what students told us, middle school and high school students, about their exposure to online learning, whether it was a 100% online class, a blended class environment, or even a self-study class that maybe they took by themselves. And what we thought was very significant is that this year, this past fall, 30% of high school students told us that they had currently had some type of an online learning experience. And you can just see the dramatic growth that we've had in online learning, both at the middle school and high school level, from 2008 to 2010. When we asked the class, the students, so if you, why would you take an online class? What would be the benefit? What's the value proposition around online learning? What we hear from high school students is it's a lot more of, well, shall we say, the traditional things that we've thought about with online learning. The scheduling convenience, I can take a class that's not offered at my school, maybe that class provides me with college credit. For middle school students, though, it's actually a very interesting difference. The middle school students talk more about the benefits of online learning as changing the learning paradigm, that they're going to be able to get extra help in a tough subject. They'd be more comfortable asking questions. They'd have a more personalized learning process. They could work at their own pace and also help facilitate some different ideas. Now, that may be a function of the middle school learning environment. It may also be a function of some new expectations that these middle school students have for online learning that is different than their older siblings because they're coming up in a different time. So another smart response opportunity, if you still have your cell phones handy. We're going to do another one. So we asked the students, if you've not taken an online class, why not? What's holding you back? What are the barriers? What are the obstacles to taking an online class? And it's preparing the assessment for us. And we have a new number here, which I'll go ahead and write over here. And we can go ahead and get started with this. And again, your responses are, you have five choices. I can't afford an online class. My school doesn't offer an online class. I don't know what online classes are available. No one at my school can help me, or I don't know how to sign up. So the number is 01-55-28. 01-5-28. So go ahead and give us your impression, then I'll share with you what the students told us. There we go. Yep. We'll try it again. It's 011-528. Okay. That'll make it easier. Let's go ahead and see what we've got here on this one. We still have some last few responses coming in. Lost our connection. Hit reconnect. Stop assessment. Well, we'll go with the responses that we have here, which looks like it was, my school does not offer online classes. 63% of you thought that, followed by 27% felt that I don't know what online classes are available. It actually was just about the reverse for high school students. It was that they did not know that what types of online classes were available at their school. It wasn't so much the school didn't offer them. It also was very significant that the students told us they didn't know who to go to get information about the online classes. What did not show up on our survey, really to any large degree, was any concern over any financial considerations or even that it might not be the best type of learning for them. It was really much more institutional barriers that were standing in the way of the students accessing the online classes. Okay, so let's now, at this point, I'd like to have Blade and Lyric come up. And we're going to go back to our map. So that we can take a look at some additional data that we have here. Okay, so what we want to do here with Blade and Lyric is that we're going to have you go ahead and, I'm sorry, guys. I need to have my Baltimore friends come up first. Sorry. I know you were excited to get to the map. I'm going to have Mark and Desrael come up because they're going to share with us some online learning data. So come on up, guys. And so what we're going to look at first is we're going to actually look at data from Digital Harbor High School, where these guys go to high school. So if you could find Maryland there on the map, you can just pop it with your finger. Yeah. Give it a pop. Here we go. So So this is actually from their high school where they had about 700, Jan, I think you had 775 kids participate in Speak Up this year in the high school. And so we asked the high school kids at Digital Harbor High School, what's the number one benefit of online learning? Now, have either one of you guys taken an online class, a fully online class? No. But you use Blackboard, right? Okay. Is that in all of your classes or just some of your classes? In two of your classes. Which classes, Israel? Okay. And how about you, Mark? Well, what we found out from the high school kids at Digital Harbor High School is when we asked them the number one benefit of online learning, 40% of them said it's because I'm in control of my own learning process. We asked them, what obstacles do you face using technology at your school? And Jan, I have to tell you, I just thought this was amazing statistics. So all across the country, the kids tell us it's filters and firewalls prevent them from getting to websites. However, either at Digital Harbor High School, you don't have any filters or firewalls, Jan. Or at least there's better access, because only 41% of the kids put that as an obstacle there. And then also the other one that was significant, is the other one that we hear all across the country from kids, is that teachers are deliberately or systematically limiting technology use. It's not that they don't have the skills. They're actually making decisions not to use technology. And that seemed to be lesser at Digital Harbor High School. So from your guys' perspectives, do you feel like you've got access to the websites that you need for your learning when you're at school? Or do you feel like you're still getting blocked a little bit? And you don't have to look at Mrs. Purnell if you don't want to. Okay, what about you, Mark? What subject do you think, which of your subjects at school, and I don't know your schedule, so I don't know what classes you're taking, but which subject do you think is technology being used the best in at your school, for you, per your schedule? Your English class? Why do you think that is? State here. We asked that question of all the students this year. We said, in which class is technology being used the most effectively? So if you would just hit the return to map, you see right there by you, Desiree. Okay, and then I want you to bring up Indiana. Can you find Indiana on there? It's actually right next to Illinois on the side over here. It's right there. Right there. Good. Okay, so actually this was really interesting in Indiana. Indiana had a statewide initiative this year to have their students and their teachers participate in Speak Up. And we thought this was really significant. Of the students nationwide, 57% of us told us it was their English class where technology was used most effectively. 80% of the students in Indiana told us, and it has to do with some very specific writing initiatives that they have in Indiana. And so we do see that coming up through the data. Thanks, guys. You can go ahead and have a seat again. Thank you. In terms of this idea of online learning, what are some of the rest of you, either some of the other students or the parents, what do you think are some of the benefits of online learning today? Anyone have a perspective? Has anybody ever taken an online class? Oh, some of the parents have taken online classes. Okay, so give us your perspective in terms of online learning.
Well, for me, I just finished a bachelor's degree online. And it was one of the best things I could have done for myself because I have 4 children, I have a full-time job, I coach 3 basketball teams, so I don't have the luxury to go to brick and mortar. I don't have the time, the luxury. I got to feed my kids at some point. But it afforded me the opportunity after 20-plus years to complete a bachelor's degree. So it was the best thing that happened for me, and April 11th, I start my master's program online as well. So
wow,
it was the best learning experience
Lydia.
For me.
That's
I support
fabulous.
It fully.
So did you Did you like the learning experience online?
I actually did. I struggled for a while with the team concept because I'm very, you know, individual oriented. So that was a struggle until I got into how the team thing worked. But I realized that working with, in any job, you work on a team anyway. But it certainly facilitated my very busy schedule. My smartphone was attached to it. So this all works very well for me.
Good.
One thing that I would add to piggyback on that is the fact that I've really appreciated online learning for supplemental knowledge, to be able to sort of keep up with trends, especially in the line of work that I'm in. You need to, you know what's happening, what's going on, and to be able to take these courses online at your own time where you can be current. I think that's vital, and it's very, very useful.
One of the things that was so interesting over the last couple of years, and it's more come out through focus groups than actually through data, though we asked this question a year ago, was I'm talking with students, particularly middle school students and even elementary students, about online learning, and they talk about all the values and the benefits of online learning, and yet none of them have taken an actual online class. And when I probed a little bit deeper in the focus groups, what I found out was that their parents had taken an online class, and the students were reflecting the value proposition that the parents had. So some of the things that, Lydia, you may have experienced in terms of being able to do it at your leisure when you want it and to be able to have a little bit more control over your time, I then hear that same value proposition coming up through the students. And so I think that's a really interesting sort of change in terms of that. So thank you very much. Okay, so let's move along. We've got one more focused topic area here. And as I said, we do have plenty of time at the end to poll our audience and also to be able to ask some more questions of our students as well. So the third key trend that we previewed in the report, and again based on conversations all across the country, is this idea of e-textbooks and digital content. Now, some of this conversation around e-textbooks has, quite honestly, from what I've been told, what I was saying is it was driven at a lot of districts are looking for ways to cut some of their expenses. And so the idea of maybe being tapping into e-textbooks, digital textbooks, online textbooks, may be a way to alleviate some costs associated with traditional textbooks. So lots and lots of conversation, lots of interest in our data in particular around e-textbooks. What we've been doing for the last 3 years is that we've been asking specifically students and parents, if you could design the ultimate e-textbook, online textbook, digital textbook, what types of features and functionality would you like to have in that textbook? And so we've learned a lot of very interesting things from the students as well as from the parents. The bottom line on all of it is that for the students and the parents, they're looking for a very interactive experience through this textbook. They're not necessarily looking for the traditional textbook on a CD or the traditional textbook on a digital reader. They're looking for something that has a different type of experience. And so some of the things that we heard this year from students and parents, and what I did is I pulled our middle school data and then disaggregated it for you by girls and boys to see if there was any sort of gender differentiation, and then also gave you middle school parents as a comparative. So we see a couple different things. We see in particular that parents are much more interested in having online tutors built into that textbook. And having had three children myself, I know that experience. At 8:30 at night, when the child is struggling with the topic and you've got a test tomorrow, I want to be able to hit a button that gets me to some sort of an online tutor that can help us through that particular problem. The students, however, particularly the middle school girls, are much more interested in building right into that textbook some chat rooms with video capability so that they could have conversations about the science topic right there within the experience. Now, some of the other things that the students told us is that in terms of online classes, actually lots of commonality amongst parents and students as on online classes. Students are a little bit more interested in the mobile app component of that textbook, and also the ability to download it to that smartphone. But we also think this is really interesting in terms of students' and parents' interest in having self-assessments built into that textbook. Little quizzes that the students themselves could take, not necessarily to hand in for a grade or to be part of their performance assessment, but so they themselves know where they are in the learning process. We thought that was very interesting. And then finally, in terms of digitally rich content coming through the textbook and not being limited to the sort of the static pages of that textbook, the idea of using virtual labs, video clips, gaming as part of it, animations and simulations, and even access to 3D content through the textbook itself, these are all ideas that really start to frame that digital textbook conversation. So our last polling opportunity for you is about what would students say would get them more interested or engaged in learning science? Is it reading a textbook, doing virtual labs, conducting some real research, possibly learning through animations or simulations, or having a teacher that is excited about learning science? So I'm going to start another assessment here, and we're going to see if it's going to work. See if we still have our internet connection or not. We'll see. And I pulled up science. We poll on science as well as on math, and we also poll on STEM careers each year. And it's really interesting to compare some of the technology-focused data against some of that science data. Okay, so we've got a new question that's up here. Again, you have 5 responses. Julie's going to try and write on the smart board again, and the problem isn't writing on the smart board, it's getting the numbers right, right? Isn't that what we realized? Okay, so it's 311868 is your number. Okay, so choose A, B, C, or D here. No? Are we not getting in? Yeah. Takes for a little time. So what we'll do is that while you're doing that, I'll just continue to keep talking a little bit. Oh, it's starting to come up. Here we go. It's definitely starting to come up. We'll see how things go. So while you're polling on that, I'm going to have ask a question of my esteemed panel that's here. How many of you are using some type of online textbook or e-textbook in your studies currently? Anyone?
Well, if I'm somewhere where I don't have my textbook and I have like a certain assignment, I can just go online.
Okay, so there is an online textbook that you can access. What subject is that in, Lyric?
I have them in English, math, and science.
Oh, okay. All right, great. Anybody else using? Yes, go ahead, Jack. Jake.
Being sent back, and now the only textbook we use in that subject is the e-textbook because they updated that.
Okay.
And
so you only have an e-textbook. Okay. All right. I was not familiar with what happened in Virginia social studies. I'll look that up, though, Jake, and we'll have a conversation about it. Anyone else using any type of e-textbook or online textbook? So it looked like our sort of crowd favorite, though we're really divided kind of evenly here between having a teacher that's excited about learning science, learning through animations and simulations, or doing virtual labs and experiments. 6% of us chose conducting real research and using online databases, and those 6% are really get the gold star today because that's actually what the students told us. Middle school and high school students told us that the best way for them to get excited about science is to do real research, using the real types of tools that actual scientists are using. Now, all of these were winners, and they all got a majority of the votes from the students, with one exception. And we could do another poll. Does anyone want to guess what that one exception was? Reading the textbook. Less than a fifth of students said that that was their preferred way of doing that. So not much of a surprise there at all. So thank you for that. Okay, so moving along, I now need my middle school students who know their way up, Lyric and Blade, come on up. And we're going to go back over to our map. Okay, and the first thing I want to do, Blade, would you just get us back to the map up here, please? Is I'm going to have you go to Virginia, so find Virginia. And we're actually going to bring up some Kenmore Middle School data. And so this is live data from Kenmore Middle School. Again, Michael had quite a few students that participated from Kenmore Middle School. And so some of the questions that we asked some of the students were, for example, what type of technology are you using for your schoolwork? And we did think it was significant that almost 50% of the Kenmore students told us they're using some type of an online textbook or online curriculum. That was significantly higher than our national number. And then we also, of course, asked our middle school students, what would you include in your ultimate textbook? The same question that I just shared with you on the data. So I want to hear a little bit from Blake and Lyric. And Lyric, as you said, you've got a little experience in terms of going online to access your textbook. What type of types of features and functionality do you think, personally, would be most important to have in that new type of textbook? What types of things? And you don't have to go with what your peers said at Kenmore Middle School. You can tell us from your own thoughts. Blade, what I'd like to have you do, just in case our audience isn't familiar, could you describe to us one of the virtual labs that you've done, just so that people can kind of get an idea of what a virtual lab is?
A virtual lab is basically instead of an actual lab,
learning experience is as good through a virtual lab as it is?
It's exactly the same. I would say it's better just because okay.
We're there.
One of the other things is sometimes you might discover it in real life, not which sodium you have to put in your solution or whatever, but online it already has accepted. So
Okay. Well, thank you very much. You guys did a great job. Okay. So just moving along, and as I said, then we're going to open up for some questions here. You know, some of the other questions that we ask the students, and I think we've touched on both of those today, is what obstacles do you face using technology? What could your principal do today to improve technology access for you? What subject is utilizing technology better? And a lot of that is documented in the report for you as well. But one of the key questions that we asked last year, which was a little bit different type of question than we'd asked previously, is we asked all the respondents, the students, the teachers, the parents, the administrators, this question. And we asked them, do you agree with this statement? My school is doing a good job of using technology to enhance learning and student achievement. And as I told you, I've had the opportunity to visit all three of the schools that have been represented here. So I know how technology is being used there. And then those are all exemplar schools in terms of the use of technology. But we also quite realistically know that that's not always the case all around the country. So what I want to share with you is this, some of the data that we heard. So what we heard is that actually, and I specifically chose for you just high school students so we could do comparatives between high school teachers, principals, parents of high school students, and high school students themselves. So as you can see, 3/4 of high school teachers and just a little bit less of high school principals said yes, they could agree with that statement. They feel that their high school is doing a good job of leveraging technology. A little bit smaller amount of parents, though significantly still a majority, almost 2/3 of parents, said yes. So let's wait for it here, folks. You want to hear what the students themselves said? Less than half of the high school students agree with that statement. Now that was at the high school level. We saw similar numbers for most middle schools as well as elementary schools. So what this shows is not so much an indictment of any particular school or district, but really more this disconnect in terms of the perception of what does it mean to be doing a good job or fully leveraging this technology for learning and student achievement. We really have a cultural gap, or what we call in the report now a chasm, in terms of the difference between what students are perceiving as effective use of technology and how the rest of us are sort of looking at that part of the world. One of the key trends that we had in the report this year, and I'm just going to touch on it briefly because it is written up in the report, is the emergence, and we heard it a little bit from our parents here this afternoon, the emergence of what we're now calling parental digital choice. The idea of parents going out and looking for digital content, online classes, websites, different types of technology solutions to bring into their home to support, to supplement, in some cases to replace what's happening in our schools or districts. Sort of there's this underground movement of parent interest in tapping into a lot of these digital solutions to be able to help their children. It is being driven in the same way that Lydia said she's taken an online class. It's being driven by parents having smartphones, taking online classes, using some of the same type of tools in their own work as well as their personal lives. This really came out at us when we asked parents this year to help us design the ultimate online school portal. When we asked that question 5 years ago, the number one thing that parents wanted was a timely updated school calendar. What we're now hearing from parents is they want access to the same curriculum materials that are being used at school. They want to have that access at home. They want to have information updated daily on homework, student test scores, achievement. They want to have special alerts when their child is missing an assignment or failing a particular class. They want tools to facilitate a three-way conversation between the teacher, the student, and the parent. And they want to even be able to have at home videos and podcasts of the teacher's lectures so that they can help support their child. As I said, the emergence of parental digital choice that we'll be talking more about. We mentioned before that we started last year's report with the social-based learning, untethered learning, and digitally rich learning as the key components. And we saw that follow through this year in terms of when we asked the students, the teachers, the parents, and the administrators to help us also design that ultimate school. As I said, it's my favorite question on the survey. We asked them, what technology tools and services do you think would have the greatest impact on learning? And the real key here is just as we saw with that question, that evaluation question about how good a job or how well are we doing in terms of leveraging technology, the key thing is here is, are we on the same page? Do we have a shared vision, or are we still digitally disconnected from each other in terms of thinking about how to impact technology. So we asked this question, I pulled it up for you in terms of looking at mobile learning, the online learning, and then the digital content. So in terms of the mobile learning, a couple interesting things jumped out at us. We saw, for example, amongst the students, these are middle school students, high school students, parents, and administrators, very strong interest in the students, huge interest in bringing their own devices to school. It's been an ongoing trend. We can see that our parents and administrators are a little bit more held back on that. We also saw very strong interest, even more so, beside the student interest, the administrator interest in starting to tap into some of these different devices, the iPads, the smartphones, different types of devices beyond just the laptop, to be able to facilitate that type of personal connectivity that we are now starting to really put value along. In terms of online learning, we see that the parents are most interested in that online tutor concept. I thought that was interesting, Mark, in terms of what you were saying around that. But also the idea of chat rooms for students. Remember, we looked at those middle school girls and their interest. We actually saw high interest from all of the students, middle school as well as high school students. It goes back to that idea of social-based learning and collaborating with their peers. And in terms of digital content, the idea of e-textbooks, very strong resonance, and a lot of similarity in the viewpoint between the students, the parents, and the administrators. Students are still much more interested in games and virtual simulations than their parents are. But this idea, and this was the first time we asked this question, the idea of adaptive software, software that could assess where the student was and make adjustments harder or lessen the difficulty or rigor, actually got very large endorsements from both the administrators and the parents in terms of the value of that. And we thought that was an interesting new trend to continue to watch. So now what I'd like to do is open it up for some questions here. Either I always have tons of questions for the panel, definitely the students, but I wanted to give all of you an opportunity if you had some specific questions for our students or for our parents. We'll take a little bit of time to answer your questions, and then I just have some closing housekeeping remarks. So does anyone have a question for our panelists here today? Yes, Gideon.
Most of the students, well, actually, sometimes the majority of students are girls who raise their hands to answer questions, so chat rooms could help, but I think we could do fine without them. So.
There we go. Some other questions? Yes. Okay. So we're actually recording this because we're going to make a podcast as we do every year. So I'm just going to repeat your question. Okay. So the question was, what type of experience have you had with the equipment, the actual technology itself, not working in the classroom? And, you know, do you have any thoughts on that? Go ahead.
Well, basically, because I don't know if it's because we have an amazing tech teacher.
And I think Blade is paying Michael afterwards or something. Michael's playing Blade. I don't know what's going on here.
But I'm pretty sure that we've never really had that much of a problem with that big of a problem with the smart board not working in our class, like to where we had to learn something else that day. It's mainly if anything has happened, it's been like the computer freezing, and we've had to just restart the computer, and then it's worked. But I've never really had anything major happen, so.
Okay. Any other experiences anyone's had? A follow-on question before your next question. Have any of you ever helped your teachers with technology? Oh, lots. Okay. Anna, tell us, Anna and Jake, tell us how you've helped your teachers with technology.
Well, sometimes there will be students who will go up and our teachers will have problems. Some of the fifth grade teachers don't necessarily, sometimes they get really frustrated with the technology, but we have Ms. Gagliolo, and she helps a lot with all the problems, and sometimes if she's helping somebody else, some of the students will come up and they'll help, like, restart the smart board, or they'll help pull up a program, so.
Okay, good. Jake, did you have an experience?
Yeah, I help, I think I help a lot with the technology. We've been working on a video in science, and that I, like, who actually came into school to help us. Everybody was like clapping for him on the way out. He came over to me at the end and said thank you a lot.
Good, good. Good, very good. Do you guys have some experience where you've helped? Sorry, I sort of jumped in. Go right ahead. Okay. So, for the students, we'll start on the student side. Do you have any concerns about your safety online?
Some textbooks that we have are a little outdated. So textbooks aren't always right either. So if you usually we're smart enough to see that if something seems a little off in our data, if we're researching for something, we'll look it up on another website. And then if we find that, you know, it's different, then we'll go with whatever, or we'll ask our teacher, and they'll usually know. But it really depends on, like, really the website, I guess, you go to. Teachers say don't go to Wikipedia, and we're usually not allowed to go on Wikipedia, but...
We actually have been polling students about some of the dangers, shall we say, of the internet for the entire 8 years that we've been doing the study. And if anyone is interested in that particular set of data, we did not include very much of that in the report, but I'd be definitely available to pull that up. And also in terms of students, how they are perceiving the accuracy of the information online and how they're discerning what is accurate information and what isn't accurate information. And it's been really interesting to see the increasing sophistication of students in terms of being able to navigate their way through. So very interesting. I saw there were some other questions. Yeah. Your public libraries and how you're using technology in school versus at home. Are you taking advantage of some of the resources in your public libraries and your school libraries in different ways today? That's okay. Marsha's good. I've known Marsha a long time. You can tell her, Disrael. You can tell her. Anybody else have a thought about libraries?
The Kemble, we have the online libraries with Acorn, and I don't really know what they're called because we did them a long time ago, but we had this research paper earlier in the year where we couldn't use anything but the online libraries, so we couldn't go on to Google at all. And we use the online libraries to do all of our research, and we found everything there. So if there ever is something we can't find on Google, if I can't find it on Google, which most of the time I can, but if I can't, I'll go on onto the online libraries and find it there.
Well, thank you. Please join me in congratulating our fabulous panel here today. And I'm sure they'll stick around a little bit if you want to get a little bit more candor from the students. You didn't get quite enough today. Just a couple closing comments here. What we're hearing, we heard it here today. You'll see it in the report. You'll continue to hear it from some of our future reports. What today's students are really looking for is learning that's enabled, engaging, and empowered. And in fact, you can get more access to our data through our website. We do have a number of new reports that are going to be coming out later this spring. We also will be podcasting this event, and so please feel free to access that as well. And of course, I also want to invite you. This was the first part of a two-part series. This was the focus on the students and the parents. On May 11th, we'll be presenting our teacher, librarian, and administrator data. So if this was the vision for the future, the other side of it is more the realities in our schools and districts, and what do we need to do to make all of this happen. So I hope you'll join us here on May 11th. Not in this room, though, folks. We'll be over on the house side. So once again, thank you so very much for joining us. It's really been a pleasure to have this opportunity to converse with you. Thank you.